Charles, Tom, and Frank Newman, who together are going to present our program this afternoon. We call it the Changing Faces of Salt Spring Island. Looking around here over the years, I can see we've got lots of changing faces here, but I don't think those are the ones that we're talking about. I think they're talking about more the historical perspective of Salt Spring and its change over the years. And as it said in the Driftwood, have we really changed at all? So we'll find out as we listen to this presentation. So Charles, welcome to our program.
You need that? You want that in there? You want the little one?
Thanks, Bob. I think I'll sit down while I do this, but there's a couple things I wanted to say at the outset. First of all, I think I should have a few credits to give. Big one to Frank Newman, as usual. Frank, it was his idea to do this particular program, and Frank, I couldn't do this without Frank. It's all his doing, and I'm sure you'll enjoy the photographs we've put together, but he's really been the one who's done all the good work. Also, we have a few photographers I should mention. We have some photographs by John Cameron that we're using, and I want to thank John for those. Gail Newman, Frank's wife, has taken a number of the photographs, and Jillian Watson has taken a few as well. So I want to thank those people for that. Couple of things. When we look at these photographs, we've decided to start by looking at the rural side of Salt Spring first and end up with Ganges. We have an awful lot of pictures of Ganges because there's a lot of changes and things that have happened in Ganges. As most of you know, Ganges really started, just after the early 1900s. It really isn't the oldest part of Salt Spring. It wasn't here all the time. And the first 50 or 60 years of Salt Spring history, Ganges wasn't important at all. But now, of course, it's the center of the island in many ways, most ways, despite what people in Fulford feel. The other thing I was going to mention was when we started thinking about this, it was kind of, photographic show. But the more I thought of it, the more I thought it really is interesting how this island has changed. It was a farming community to begin with, and it's now become really a tourist destination in many ways. Some of the farming that still exists, the agricultural community is quite strong but small. But the big impetus here is tourism. And keep that in mind as you're looking at the pictures. We'll probably talk about more of that as we go along. So I guess we could start. Do we want to turn the lights on? I have a flashlight, so if I have to read something, I can see. I've got to sit down. So here we are down in Fulford. The Fulford Inn. A lot of these pictures show Mount Maxwell in the background and give you a bit of a background. You can see exactly where we are. The Fulford Inn has changed quite a bit over the years, and we'll see that in some of the historical pictures. We can go on now. Now, this is an interesting photograph. In the early days, there weren't a lot of roads. One of the reasons why there weren't a lot of roads was because they didn't have a caterpillar until the 1930s. And so there was this big bridge that went across the Fulford Estuary, and that's how you went across from where you come down to where Isabella Point meets the Fulford Ganges Road and where the ferry is. And I always thought this was really interesting. I wished that I had been able to see it, but it was long gone by the time I got here. So we included this because it's such a nice picture. Now, this is one of the early Fulford Inns. There were three on that location. The first one was called Roger's Saloon, and it was kind of interesting because it was the only place you could get a drink on the island at that point. And Reverend Wilson, it was a really something he hated because he was a teetotaler and he didn't believe people should drink. So when it burned down in 1901, Reverend Wilson was overjoyed. He thought that the island had really improved. This one was called the White Lodge. At one time it was the White House, and at another time it was the White Lodge. And it was built in 1913. This picture is from about 1930. And this would have been the when the Sai Pek started. The Sai Pek was Salt Spring's first ferry. And there were a lot of celebration as a result of that. And this is what was happening here at the White House, White Lodge, which is very close to the ferry. And this is another picture of the this was a the same area, the same building, the same hotel, but I think a different building. And this is Fulford Pier. That's the Iroquois, which was a boat that that came to Salt Spring, went to Sydney, and it was, as you can see, it's a very top-heavy boat, and it wasn't very seaworthy. Eventually sank in 1911, and quite a lot of Salt Springers lost their lives. You can see the bridge that we saw in the earlier picture in the distance in this picture, but you don't see at this point a Fulford Inn of any kind, really. So that's Edward's store, which was one of the early stores in Burline Valley. In the middle of the picture, yeah, there you go. We'll see another picture of Edward's store. It's kind of interesting because it doesn't exist anymore. And one of the things that I thought was kind of interesting as I went through these photographs is how many things of quite a large, substantial nature no longer exist. And these, where they did exist, there isn't anything. Which is interesting because quite often when something disappears, there's something bigger. And this that was an Ackerman in the previous picture, and there's soon going to be an Ackerman in this picture. And one was the old Ackerman. What are their names, Frank?
It was Molly.
Molly
and Lexi.
Lexi. And they were about the same age, except perhaps 100 years apart, maybe 75 years apart. And here it's Edward's store, and you can see the tree in front of it, that weeping elm. You may have spotted it on the road. And the next picture shows what it looks like today. And it's the same tree. It's been there for, I don't know, close to 100 years. I'm having trouble seeing my notes here. Edward's store was there from 1896, it was a post office from 1896 to 1918. I think it was there longer than that. But we've gone to the next picture. The post offices were very important, and there was one in Burgoyne Valley, there was one in Fulford, there was one in Burgoyne. Okay, we can go on. We have lots of pictures to look at. So this is the Burgoyne Valley, and that's the that's Burgoyne United Church. And that's a steel log school that's right opposite. There's an interesting collection. I meant to mention it before, but this is a good opportunity to mention it, that I think Usha was largely responsible for putting together down at Mark's Work Warehouse in the Windows. It's a really good display of the education on the, schools on the old schools on the island before they became consolidated, all the old one-room schoolhouses. And that one was replaced at some point with a bigger one-room school. But that was the original one that I think was from 1872.
Yes.
Now, there are a lot of people here who have a lot more information than I have, and as I get older, I find I forget a lot of these things. So if I make any mistakes, please feel free to correct me. I have a very good self-concept, and you won't you won't hurt me by telling, by presenting the right information. And we won't call that revisionist history. It'll just be, you know, getting it right. Go on. Okay, and this is a modern picture of the church. Now this is one of those houses, this that was no longer exists, and it was quite substantial. It belonged to the Mollets, John and Maud. John Carter Mollet and his wife Maud. And they came from Ontario in 1896. They were on Ford Lake, and then they moved here to the Fofokanjis Road. That thing on the right is called a ram, and it was used to raise water and distribute it for irrigation to his pond and garden. And I just want to read you this. It's quite interesting. This, what I'm going to read you, was written by a fellow named Lucan Johnston, who wrote a book called Beyond the Rockies in 1929. And he was on a walking tour of Canada. He was a Brit, and he was on a walking tour of Canada. And he came through Salt Spring. For, you know, for all I know, he might have been the first tourist. As I said, this is, you know, what started as a farming community, and we're largely tourism now. This guy was one of the first tourists, and here he came upon this incredible garden. Near the end of my walk, I came to a spot where a rustic bridge crossed a babbling brook. Looking down a grassy bank where woodland flowers poked their heads up to the sunshine, I saw a miniature spillway in a tiny pond. A few yards farther on, through an ivy-colored gateway, I caught a glimpse of a most lovely garden ablaze with flowers. I heard a voice calling the chickens to supper, and so, entering the gate, I met John Carter Mollet, 81 years old in March last, and still in love with every flower in his garden. He took me around the well-kept beds. "You seem to love your garden," said I. "My garden? It is my life," he said earnestly. "I work from 5 in the morning till dark, and I am never done with the flowers." Then, his snow-white hair and beard and his battered hat making him a quaint old figure, he took me to see his water ram, a simple device by which he controls all the water he needs from his never-dry spring. We stood and chatted a while at the gate, and he gave me a buttonhole of pansies. Then he said, "Well, young man, I must go to my chickens. I've been living all alone for 14 years, you know, and I'm busy. Goodbye, and come and see the old man's garden if you pass this way again." So there you go, perhaps Salt Spring's first tourist. And there is John and Maud in front of their house. And this no longer exists. And we tried to duplicate the, you know, the spot. I'm not sure exactly where it is. I'm sure there are people here who do. In Salt Spring, the Story of an Island, I wrote in the caption that all you can see is a line of poplars, but I couldn't find a line of poplars, so either I was wrong or they've been gone since that book was published. Anyway, there you go. Ah, bed is speech. Isn't that interesting? Bed is speech. We couldn't take a photograph of this today. As you'll see as we move on, I had to go out in my kayak to take a picture of bed is speech, and I still couldn't get this. But that was the baddest homestead. And I have another thing I want to read you. This is the only other thing I'm going to read you. But I thought it was kind of fun. And it deals with the Bettises, and ties a lot of these places together. In 1910, a fellow named, and I'm not sure I'm pronouncing his first name correctly, but Kyle Simons, he is a teacher at Beaver Point School. He was trying to get his wife to the doctor by road when she was in labor. And he had no alternative but to row her to the Bettis home where Emily Bettis helped deliver the baby. And here's his account of how he got home. "The return home in December was in its way an odyssey. It was a bad day, very wet and with a rising wind. Mrs. Bettis saw us into a small rowboat I had borrowed. Hot bricks were put on the floor and a shapeless bundle of rugs, etc., that was my family, was installed in the back. We rowed to the Bowman Sawmill in Cushing Cove, now no more, where the foreman boosted them up a steep ladder to a little cottage. Here, a short rest and some hot cocoa did wonders. The next step was to board the old steamer Iroquois, which not long afterwards was lost with many good lives. On it, we reached Beaver Point Wharf in a gale and deluge. Here, another good friend, still my good friend, Mr. Ruckel, lent us a horse and buggy, and we drove home, avoiding falling branches with more luck than skill. There, Mrs. Monk had a nice fire going and took charge while I drove the carriage back in pitch darkness, finally returning to a little scene which I can only leave you to imagine. And the reason he had to do that was because a tree had fallen across the road, and he couldn't get to the hospital by road, so he had to go to Mrs. Bettis, and she delivered the baby. But that gives you kind of a feel for what life was like back then. So here's some of the photos I took from the water of Bettis Beach, because there's the castle on Bettis Beach. It's quite a different place today. And one of the things that you'll notice as we go through these pictures is, and it was funny because when I wrote that book, Saltzman Story of an Island, I remember Manson Toynbee coming up to me and saying, you know, I can't understand why people are complaining whenever people cut down trees here, because the island's covered with trees. When I grew up, there were no trees on the island. And that's what these old pictures show. There are no trees on the island, and today, it's all trees. So I guess those old timers are right. The trees do grow back. Now we're at Cushion Cove. So you see, I read that quote because it pulls together the Iroquois, Bettis's, and Cushion Cove, because this is where that steamer stopped. And it's kind of strange to look at this picture of Chris's house there and think that a steamer actually stopped there. There was a big dock there and a big wharf and a mill. And this is what was there in Cushion Cove back in the early 1900s. So, you know, that's a huge change. Something really, really big that was there is no longer there. Although Chris's house is pretty big. And of course, there's lots more trees today. But now we're in Vesuvius. And we like these pictures because they kind of show how things have changed in the schoolroom. We have a few of those. Multi-level classes, we still have multi-grades, but not nearly covering quite as many grades as they did back then. You can see the class from the short kids to the tall kids, they're all there in the same one-room schoolhouse. And this is what school looks like today, at least in Fulford. I've never been in the Fulford school, but it's quite pretty, isn't it? And here we are in Vesuvius, and you can see what I meant by the no trees. I couldn't get a picture like this. I tried going to friends' properties to just overlook it, and all I could see were trees. I tried going down on the wharf. I tried taking pictures from the ferry. I just couldn't get a picture like this. But those are the Bittencourt cottages in the middle. One of them became the museum. I'm not sure which one, if it was one of those. One Bittencourt cottage still there. It was a chapel, and it's still a chapel. Oh, it's not still a chapel, it's still a house. But you can see it down near the ferry dock. And the lodge, which Vesuvius Lodge, which was there till 75 when it burned down, is not in this picture really. It's probably taken, this picture probably taken from there. You can see the old dirt road. And there's the, go on, Frank. I'm probably talking too much anyway. Once I get started, hard to tell me. You can see again how there's no trees there. That would have been the amphitheater for the Vesuvius Inn, if the proprietor of this current Vesuvius Inn, which is no longer functioning, had his dream done. There would have been concerts up that hill, I guess. But there's still a lot more trees there now than there were then. And that was the old Vesuvius Inn, or I think it was called Vesuvius Lodge back then, that burned down in 1975. Yeah, Betancourt store, and then he turned it into a hotel. So it was a hotel and store. Oh, I should mention, there's an interesting website called Who Killed William Robinson that relates to this, because Betancourt, who was a Portuguese immigrant to Salt Spring and had a lot of land and quite a lot of money when he died, he owned the area around the dock. So, you know, he'll know what you're looking at. But originally it had been owned by a black man named William Robinson. They always said that William Robinson had been killed by Native people. But Ruth Sandwell and John Lutz, in their website, Who Killed William Robinson, made a case for Betancourt being the murderer for the land, which would have been very valuable because it was, you know, the place that they put the dock. And so here you've got the old dock, and the previous picture you had the new dock. Give you an idea of before and after. Are we going to see that one again, the new one? Yeah, there it is. So that's kind of interesting, in the juxtaposition there. Maybe one day the inn will open again. Another picture of the suit.